on ABC Radio.
This is The Big Fish
with Scott Levi.
Ahoy there, welcome aboard. Our first cast this morning is with Peachy's Fly Rod as we take you to the Snowy Mountains for the National Fly Fishing Championships. It's the Big Fish, and some of the best fly fishers in the land descended upon the Snowy Mountains for the national championships, the national titles. And it's a sport that many countries around the world get into. It's a catch and release competition. And one of them was regular Big Fish correspondent, Steve Peachy Peach. Morning, Peachy.
G'day, Scott. How are you?
Yeah, going well. How did you go?
Oh, well, I had a good start. I had a really good start in the first session. We were on a lake, which is part of a private fishery called Dixieland that used to be sort of open to the public many years ago, and hopefully, I'm hoping might come online again soon. But we had one of the lakes there is big enough for us to put five boats on. So we had a great session on the lake. I was lucky and I figured out something fairly early on in that session, and I ended up catching 12 fish and winning the session by a really comfortable margin, which was great. And there were some lovely fish in there too. There's some rainbows in there that are in the mid 50 centimetre range, and they really solid fish, and they go very hard. But then the second session, I came seriously unstuck, unfortunately. The second session was on a smaller lake, and by all accounts, the cormorants had been through and cleaned out most of the fish that had been stocked in there, the smaller fish that had been stocked for the competition. So there was just a small handful of really large fish left in that lake, and there were only two fish caught in that whole sector out of our entire group in session two. So that was a blank. And when you blank in competition fishing, that means you come equal last and you get the the maximum number of placing points, which is not good. You want the lowest number of placing points. One means first. But out of a group of nine of us, if you come equal last, you get 10 placing points. So
you went from first to last.
I did.
It's a funny old game. I've fished those lakes. They're truly amazing. And trout farming pioneer, aquaculture pioneer, Rod Smith from Tumut, actually originally set up that place. And there was a hatchery that drew water from the Murrumbidgee just down below in the gorge. And it's a beautiful property, and they're beautiful lakes, and the fish in there are magnificent. It's the total opposite to stocky bashing, isn't it? They're full of fin and full of fight and really big, fat rainbows. And we had one night there, I was with Steve Dunn, and we had a Kosciuszko Dunn hatch, actually right on dark, and those huge mayflies that are as big as your thumb started popping up on one of the smaller lakes up from the big one where you did so well. And the place was boiling with his 2 to sort of 4 pound rainbows and just a big upwing mayfly and just put it out near where they were rising, and whooshka, you'd hear them suck it down, you know, and they fight so hard. They're just magnificent fish. It's a great fishery. I think they called it Kattegat Lakes after that, and then it was up for sale. I don't know who owns it now, but certainly a beautiful part of the world, and the locals up at Adaminaby Way know it as Dixieland. That was its original name. It was sort of a private fly fishery, but it's a lovely place, and they're beautiful fish in there. They really are magnificent. I think I wrote a little article for Fly Life about some success using a cone-headed orange woolly bugger and doing a mend. It was interesting. The fish weren't taking the fly if you stripped it straight, but if you chucked it out over the weed beds, and the extensive weed beds in there, clear water, and if you flicked a mend to the end of the line so that it gave enough slack for the fly to dive straight down, that was a trigger, and the fish would grab it. My theory was that, you know, little things like mud eyes and things, if they're pursued by a hungry giant rainbow trout, they're going to dive straight for the weeds, and it seemed to be the trigger that made them grab that fly. So I had a bit of success then, and the other boys were blanking. So, these fisheries aren't easy. I think a lot of people think stocked lakes are easy, but they're not, are they?
No, not necessarily. And these fish are very much naturalised now in the lake, and they're responding to the natural food cycles within the lake. So, you know, as you said, on that particular day, you found a pattern that worked and that obviously matched something that the fish were feeding on. I found something quite different there in this competition where, as you said, there are extensive weed beds and it's quite clear. And I figured out fairly early on that the fish weren't up on the surface. So I was fishing some small sort of swimming mayfly imitations that we call crunches. And I put them on a heavy sweep line, which basically moves the fly in an arc. And when you're fishing from a boat towards a bank, it sort of imitates the natural contour of the lake going down into the water. My idea was to try to get the flies down hovering within a foot or two of the top of the weed beds and just fish it above the weed beds. And that seemed to work really well. I was lucky early on in the session. I found a pattern that worked, and then I was able to capitalize on it. But yeah, as you say, the fish's feeding patterns change all the time depending on what the food sources are within the lake. So I took a guess that they might be feeding on mayflies at this time of year and happened to come up trumps.
So that's a very traditional looking pattern, isn't it? It's got the wee wet sort of look to it, like a stream of, you know, not a streamer, but a team of flies that someone would fish in England.
Yeah, that's right. It's basically, if you could imagine, a fairly traditional sort of pheasant tail nymph style fly with a soft hackle collar around it that just pulses a little bit in the water, and it's meant to be sort of retrieved. It's a sort of slow swimming kind of pattern. It's one that's worked really well for me. It can be very effective, particularly in the sort of the spring months.
What size were you fishing?
14.
Yeah, right. So, not huge, because those giant Kosciuszko duns that live in there, their nymphs must be enormous, but they're quite a nocturnal nymph. They seem to hatch, you know, after 8 o'clock on a summer's night. Those big Kosciuszko duns come up, and you'll get them on the Tumut River and the Yukonbeen and other places as well. We're speaking with Steve Peachy, who was at the Fly Fishing Nationals up in the Snowy Mountains. So that was one of the locations. I believe you had a tough time of it on Yukonbeen as well.
Yeah. Our last session was at Braemar Bay, which can be a fabulous location. I've had some really wonderful fishing at Braemar in the past, but Yukonbeen seems to be fishing pretty tough at the moment. Certainly the rainbows are a bit scarce during the daytime, and the fish generally are sort of, at least the last couple of times I've fished it, have not been up on the edges. They've tended to be out wider and in deeper water, so a little bit more difficult to target. But our session on Braemar, there was only one fish caught out of the entire group, out of 9 anglers.
Unbelievable. That's sort of up the top end of the system, isn't it? It's such a huge impoundment. I've done most of my fishing around Frying Pan, Buckandera, Old Adam Inaby, those sorts of places. But that's fairly deep water in sections there as well.
Yeah. Braemar Bay is sort of down at the south end, actually, sort of near, closer to the wall, to the dam wall. And it does have some sort of relatively deep water in it. There's a few good banks in there. And it's interesting how the different bays in Yukonbeen can fish at different times. I think probably the Buckandera arm would be my favourite of all of them, because it tends to be pretty reliable, whereas some of the other bays, like Braemar, can be a little more hot and cold, I think you would say. I've had red-hot fishing in there, but I've also had very hard fishing in there, and that was all we had for this comp.
I think the best... One of the best spots I've fished is Seven Gates, and there are those shallower places on a summer's evening. But, of course, you're fishing in the daytime, aren't you? I think in summertime particularly, night fishing with dark flies on a dark night is just dynamite in Eucombin if you want to catch a trophy brown and the rainbows if the mud eyes are moving particularly. But that place is, the trollers with the lead lines and things don't mind that end of the lake, but it's difficult for fly.
Yeah, that's right. And I think especially at the moment with the season that we've had the last year or two with all the cormorants that have been around, plus also there's pelicans and things like that on Lake Eucombin as well. And for whatever reason, the last year or two, the fish during the day seem to be too scared to come up on the edges very much, I think. So it's leaving us having to resort to targeting them in deeper water, which, as you said, is more difficult to do on fly tackle.
Yeah, look, I've had so much success there, just sleeping through the day and then, you know, just relaxing. And then as the sun goes down, then you start casting. That's the old summertime Eucombin tactic. So that was a bit of a blank, but you were still all right because your first day in the lead would have had you up amongst the good ones. But there are some sensational fishes. I was thinking of a fella from Victoria who's got a great YouTube channel, not to mention one of your rivals, not that he'd be a rival, because Peachy has a great YouTube channel as well, but Tom Jarman, he's a cracker, isn't he? He's a wonderful fisherman. I love his instructional stuff. And he gives away all of his secrets. I think that's the sign of someone who's really confident in their ability.
Yeah, look, Tom is an extraordinary competition angler. I think he's competed for Australia for many, many years now, and I think in the last 12 years, I don't think he's finished outside the top 20 in the world individually in the world championships. So he's, I think you'd have to say he's our strongest competition angler at the moment. And yes, he does. He certainly gives away a lot of information in his channel, which is fantastic. But I think there's probably a lot more that he knows and that he does, maybe that he doesn't reveal.
He'll probably tell you after the competition's over. He seems like a nice lad, a Victorian, isn't he? Yep. He catches some great fish in Victoria, but he also works as a professional guide, doesn't he?
Yes, he does. He does sort of guiding and tuition and clinics and that sort of stuff.
And he's currently the number one ranked fly angler in Australia. Was there a stream component as well, a river component, where you get it, draw a beat and fish that area? That's a bit of a lucky dip, a bit of a lottery, isn't it?
It can be, yeah. Yes, so we had the river sector that we had was Tom Grogan on the Upper Murray, and that held up relatively well. It's one of, there have been a lot of sort of rivers around the area that haven't been fishing well, but fortunately for us, Tom Grogan was still fishing okay. I didn't do so well on the river. I got a couple of fish, and I missed a couple that cost me. But you know, certainly there were some anglers who managed to have really, really good sessions on the river. When we have the nationals in New South Wales, it tends to be more lake heavy because that's the natural sectors that we have here in New South Wales. But in Victoria, for example, it tends to be more river focused. And in Tassie, it's sort of an even split, I think you would say, of rivers and lakes in the competitions.
And I hear, and you're not making any excuses, but I hear you drew the beat right next to the campsite where everyone fishes. Is that true?
I did, yeah. I had the campground. And look, I know that it can be a fantastic bit of water. I've fished it before and done very well there. But I got it in the fourth session, and it was a relatively short beat with a couple of fairly obvious runs in it. And clearly by the time I got to it, it had been gone over well and truly by some great fishermen. But, you know, no excuses. There's everybody who fishes in that session is in the same boat. All of their sectors have been fished pretty hard. There's always a bit of variability, I suppose, in your beats as to how many fish are actually available and how many different types of water you've got in your particular beat. But, you know, what you find is that the really great anglers consistently manage to eke out fish that other people don't.
So it's a fair test in the end. We're speaking with Peachy on the Big Fish, just back from the Fly Fishing Nationals. And, of course, you're already in the, dare I say, senior team, the veterans team. Is that for the over-whats?
Over 50 is, yeah, the
Masters. Oh, you don't
team.
Look a day over 49. You really, really don't. So this was the Open, wasn't it? This was the Open.
Yeah, this is the Open. This is everybody.
And how did you go in the end?
I ended up coming 22nd on place points. I was 6th on fish points because of that really good first session that I had. But those couple of blanks really cost me a lot. And there were a lot of really great anglers, actually, in the comp who came unstuck on a couple of those tough sectors and ended up way down in the rankings. But, you know, full credit to Tom Jarman and to Paul Simmons in second and Jared Klein in third. They all managed to get through without a blank and finished strongly. So, you know, at the end of the day, competition fishing is ultimately about consistency and being able to just not blank a session.
Did you get a bit overconfident when you were way out in the lead?
I don't know about overconfident.
For one night, you were strutting around the campsite.
Oh, look, I knew that some of the sectors coming up were going to be tough, and I think I went into it with the idea that if I could get through without a blank, then I'll probably be in the top 10 easily. But it wasn't to be.
Oh, well, that's just how it is, but it's a great learning curve, isn't it? And did you pick up any tips from the stars?
I don't know about picking up tips from the stars, but certainly I took away a couple of things. Jared was fishing next to me. Jared ended up coming third. He was fishing next to me on the small lake, and he caught one of the only two fish on that day. And, yeah, he was using a particular combination of flies that I think worked pretty well for him. If anything, I think the big takeaway for me from competition fishing is there's usually something that'll work on the day when nothing else is, and you have to be prepared to change and experiment and cycle through kind of a logical progression of ideas to work out what's going to work on the day. You also have to have a little bit of luck, of course, and it's always very difficult when you're in a sector that has very low numbers of fish, because you don't have much data to work with. You don't know necessarily whether you're doing the right thing or the wrong thing, or if it's just that you're not putting your fly in front of a fish. So the guys who do really, really well, obviously they have to fish very well, they have to be doing all the right things, but they also need just that little bit of luck to put their fly in front of the fish at the right moment. Which is always a little bit challenging, in these sectors where you have really low numbers.
And what sort of techniques were you using throughout the tournament? I mean, we heard about a swimming mayfly technique. So that sounds really, really interesting. That obviously flicked the switch on those Cattegat Lake or Dixieland trout. What about the techniques on the on Eucumbean? I guess you would have thrown everything at them, every line, every fly, tried everything.
Yeah, we tried a few different things. So I was fishing with a fellow by the name of Stuart Dick, who's probably the number two angler on the Australian team. He's a fantastic, fantastic angler. Stewie came sixth in the World Championships last year, individually. But we threw the kitchen sink at them and kind of couldn't put anything together.
There is a great nymph called the pot scrubber nymph, don't you? you would have tied that on. It's a funny looking thing.
We've got one that we fish in Eucumbean that's a favourite that's, I suppose I can say it on radio, it's called the throbbing knob.
How did your throbbing knob go?
Well, you know, the throbbing knob is usually a pretty good fly on Eucumbean, but it wasn't this particular day. We fished that under the bung, which is a like a suspension device. It's like an indicator fly, basically, for suspending nymphs.
You tried everything. You tried depth. The bung, you tried teams, you've tried sinking lines. I bet you tried every trick, and to no avail, with the 6 best fly fishermen in the boat in the world, and if he's not catching a few, well, you know you're in for a tough day.
Yeah, I did have a I did have a shot at a fish at the end of that session. There's a fly that I was fishing on top. I started pulling streamers towards the end on a sinking line. And there's a fly on the top that I was using called a sparkler. And I had a fish come up and slash at the sparkler on the surface and missed it. And I sort of cursed and threw the fly straight back in again at it. And it came up and ate it again and missed it again.
Oh, no.
And that was my opportunity.
That would have made a difference. That would have made a difference, wouldn't it?
Well, yeah. That would have been the difference between 10th and 2nd in that session.
Unbelievable. And well, you did very well. You've represented the big fish and Peachy's Fly Fishing on YouTube to great success, about middle of the road, which is pretty good. Pretty good for a bloke who only took it up when he was 33 years of age, as we found out. And what about techniques on the river section on the Upper Murray, Tom Grogan?
Yeah, so that was an interesting one. The type of water that I had was mainly sort of nymphing runs and shelves, and I did have a little bit of dry fly water at the top. So I got one fish in a nice nymphing run to start with, and then I hooked a pretty good fish in the same water, but unfortunately I dropped it. I had it on for about 5 seconds, and then it just spat the hook.
Ah, Peachy.
I probably didn't get a good hook set on it.
If you'd caught that one and the one on Braemar Bay, where would you have come, do you think, in the competition?
Oh, look, could have been up in the top 10.
No. Yeah. Anyway. Never mind. Can't cry over lost fish.
No, that's often it's often one fish, two fish is the difference, but it's the same for everybody in the competition. And
Did you do any Euro nymphing?
Yep. So I did catch the one fish Euro nymphing, and then later on in the session, the second fish that I got was on a dry fly up at the top of the beat. But I found out later that the guy who won our session actually did so using a very traditional sort of old English technique, which is fishing spiders, North Country spiders. I don't know if you've heard of that.
Yeah, they're a soft tackle fly.
Yeah,
a bit similar to what you did well on Dixieland with. And what was the camaraderie like? Was there nights around the fire to compare your best and all that, you know?
Yeah, look, it was fantastic. During the comp, obviously, everybody's focused. And, you know, at night, we're pretty exhausted by the end of the day. We'll go back, tie a few flies, rig up a few rigs for the next day, and then go to bed. But at the end of it all, on the Saturday night, we had a presentation dinner with the competitors, but also the volunteers who come along to be controllers for the competition. We all get together and have a big dinner together and drinks, and that was a fantastic night. And the camaraderie is fantastic in these competitions. You know, I think perhaps there's been a little bit of a negative perception out there in some quarters about competition fishing. You know, the idea that it might get a bit narky or people might be overly competitive, but actually it's not like that at all. It's very kind of friendly and supportive. People are generally, you know, willing to share a fair amount of information and a very kind of welcoming of, you know, anybody who's new and getting into it. So, yeah, for many people, I think the social aspect of competition fishing is maybe one of the best things about it.
Well, it's just great that you do it. Look, you would fish. I've fished with you. He'd fish from dawn to dusk anyway, folks, so he doesn't need any excuse to be obsessed with fly fishing and have a crack at the national titles. Good on you, Peachy. I reckon it's wonderful that you get stuck in and you just get so much joy out of it. And in my eyes, you're number one, because I think the best fisher is the one having the most fun, and I can guarantee that would have been you.
Well, you know, I think it's a good attitude to have if you're going into competition fishing, is just to make sure that, I think, you know, when I started competition fishing, I had two goals, basically. The first one was to enjoy myself, and the second one was to learn something. And I think if you can tick those two things off in a competition, then, you know, you're a winner.
Absolutely. Tight lines, Peachy. Catch you next time on The Big Fish.
Thanks, Scott.
The Big Fish with Scott Levi on ABC Radio.
Coming up on The Big Fish, Stinker with his top five and some monster mulloway off the beach. And Kendall Kramer joins us from Coffs Coast and also talking about the latest round of the Bass Electric, where she did pretty well. And we'll catch up with Craig McGill on Sydney Harbour, where they're catching some monster flathead, some absolute beauties, and, of course, handling them carefully and letting them all go to breed.
The Big Fish with Scott Levi on ABC Radio.
Here comes Stinker with his fishing tips. Some hot advice for your fishing trip. Where to find them? What's the bait?
Are you catching any, mate?
Morning, Stinker.
Hey, g'day, Scott.
Stinker, for a lot of people, the fun's in the journey and the exploring and catching a few fishes. A bit of an added bonus. Where are some of the spots that you love to go and maybe catch a fish or maybe just have a look?
Oh, gee. How long have we got, Scott? I mean, that's the beauty of Port Stephens. It has got so many options. And inside the port and outside the port. So if we're talking inside the port, then we're talking the West Harbour and the East Harbour. So there are two parts to the harbour. So then you talk about, okay, let's talk about West Harbour. So West Harbour is west of Soldiers Point. So then you're up in a mud crab country and big flathead. That's what you like. Blue swimmers, mud crabs and big flathead. And Mulloway. So you look around the Karua Bridge and, oh, dear me. So that's that half of the port. Then let's have a look at the East Harbour. Well, then you're sort of looking at Wyking, Brim. Oh, yeah, Brim in the other harbour too. Look, Scott, there's so many fish are in this place. You can just about go anywhere in the harbour and catch anything, really, during the summer months. But East Harbour, that's from Soldiers Point to the Heads, you're mainly looking at big whiting and brim along the breakwall. In certain conditions, you'll get snapper and mulloway and kingfish. Tuna come into the East Harbour quite regularly at certain times of the year. So you can catch anything in the East Harbour. As blue swimmer crabs, more likely than mud crabs. Muddies get back to the western part. So really, if you want to list everything, the list is quite long. But then, of course, you go outside the harbour onto the beaches. Well, the best two beaches are, Stockton and Pingle. They're the best two, bar none. And they're beautiful beaches, aren't they, Scott?
Oh, unbelievable. It was interesting when we were on Broughton and looking across to that huge beach that goes all the way up to the Gibber and then all the way up Mungo Brush and all the way up to Seal Rocks and those fires smouldering away. They got going a bit in the heat, didn't they?
It seems to me that there's always a fire over that side. I mean, I'm on the south side of Port Stephens, but I look over towards Buller Dealer. And there's always something smouldering. The Antique Gardens, Hawk's Nest, I don't know, they seem to have more than their share of fires over that side. But then we've talked about what's in the harbour, and we've talked about what's on the beach. Well, the beaches at this time of the year, the big whiting have moved onto the beaches. There's flathead all the way along the beaches. This is the time of the year for duskies on the beach. And then, of course, the salmon come along when you least expect them. Big brim, you'll get big brim there too. Mulloway Sea. It's mulloway season. I don't fish for mulloway anymore. I hope I never see another one. They're too big. But mulloway, and they're beautiful, big, handsome fish. And really, I caught too many of them, Scott. It's just, I hope I never catch another one. I'm avoiding them as best I can. But a mate of mine through the week, he was fishing for a snapper with cube yellowtail, and he caught two. Well, he tried to get one in the boat by pulling it in by the tail. Well, that didn't work. Then he threw out again and got another one, and they were both well over 20 kilo, fishing with a cube of yellowtail on an unweighted 4-0 hook. So that's what you're likely to get at this time of the year. And on the beach, you'll get mulloway fishing with the worm for a whiting, and then all of a sudden, all your fishing gear just disappears to sea. So, oh, look, there's so much happening, Scott. And, of course, Christmas, well, everyone's going to pile in here for Christmas, so it's just going to be fun and fishing, that's for sure.
Good on you, Stinker. Well, tight lines, mate. It's that time of year where usually leave it to the tourists, don't you, and head back to the Tweed or somewhere like that. So we might have a report from up that way in the not-too-distant future.
Oh, well, I'll be spending January up there, and I won't be reporting much because I just sort of lay in the warm water like a big frog. That's what I normally do. But January, I just sort of pretend I'm a big frog.
Good on
I
you.
Do a little bit of fishing here and there. It's a mighty time of the year, that's for sure.
Yeah, great time to be a frog. But don't drink like a fish. Tight line, Stinker.
Hooray, Scott.
This is The Big Fish with Scott Levi on ABC Radio.
It's The Big Fish, and Kendall Kramer's been chasing bass, competition bass. It's funny, you can catch them all the time, but as soon as you declare a competition, Kendall, they get harder, don't they?
Oh, you bet they do. I think they see us coming. They can smell it.
They can indeed. You've been in another round of the Bass Electric. It's a good idea because it might open up a lot more impoundments in New South Wales if people have non-polluting boats. We'll be able to fish some of those places where we're not allowed to fish. Is that part of the formula?
Yeah. There's quite a few dams that we do in the Bass Electric Tour that are electric-powered vessels only. There are obviously other ones that we go to, like Somerset and even, you know, the Clarence River, where you are allowed petrol-powered boats. Some of them do specify that you're not allowed two-stroke, and there has to be, you know, the eco-friendly type motors in there anyway. But in the way of the dams, where it's the drinking water for the area, quite often they are now stipulating those types of restrictions on people. So it's, you know, going to help to make sure that no petrol gets into the water that is being consumed by the towns around. So there are definitely some dams, like my local dam here in Coffs Harbour, you're not even allowed to go into it. So I think there's a lot of opportunity to try and open a few more dams for things like that, where we're trained and educated on how to keep it safe.
Now, I'm just looking at the Bass Electric Tour site, and there's one of the Women's Recreational Fishing League anglers holding a huge bass. So someone caught something.
Is that the one from the last one? Or that's probably Karen's photo, is it, from last year?
I think it might have been Karen from last year. Yeah, that was an absolute cracker. So how did you go on Maroon?
Yeah, we did really well, actually, and it was off the back of that little charter that we did with Maddie Langford and caught our big girls and learnt a lot, like we spoke of last time I was on. And we put that plan into motion. We did also have a crack at some other things that people on the day were recommending for that specific spot. We tried the edges and stuff like that later on in the day because people had found that had produced a little bit and we'd hit a quiet spot. It didn't really work for us. So we sort of just stuck with what Maddie taught us, and we had actually done really well on the spoons where we were throwing it out, and the same, we call it now the Maddie method. You throw it out and retrieve it pretty quickly for a third of the way and then let it drop for 3 seconds, another third, let it drop for another 3 seconds, and then wind it back in just through the thermocline line. So that's what we were doing to catch the big ones with Maddie. And, yeah, so we just employed the same technique in Maroon Dam, and it got both of us one fish each on pre-fish day and comp day. So that is the best that we've done so far. We didn't place. We still have a lot of room for improvement, but we were super happy because we've definitely improved our luck and our skills. So I'll take that.
And you certainly weren't last.
No, we definitely were not. There are people that did not catch a fish, so we were very proud of ourselves.
Excellent stuff. Kendall, and who were you fishing with?
I was fishing with Trish Wilkins. She's one of our newer members of the Women's Recreational Fishing League. She's fresh over here from South Africa, and she's an incredible angler. She was the team captain for the Zambian fishing team in South Africa for many years, and she was a part of the team before she became captain. And the skills that she comes along with her are incredible and are going to be invaluable when it comes to training our women in how to tournament fish. So she is going to be helping me out with the 50-50 boat when I'm not able to take on some rounds as well. So she's been an excellent addition.
Has she been regaling you with great stories of fishing in Africa for, I don't know, giant tiger fish and cob and all sorts of stuff? I think they call their Mulloway cob over there, don't they?
Oh, that her story is incredible. Like, tiger fish and their brim are so different to ours, and barbel and just all these different species that, you know, you'd never heard of living in Australia. And if you haven't been over there and seen it, it's just a whole other world. And, you know, their dangers, I mean, we have crocodiles, but they've got crocodiles as well, but they've also got to be aware of the hippopotamus and the elephants and all these animals that we don't even think twice about. So it's so much more dangerous over there than we've got here. We're worried about a little snake in the water.
Oh, fantastic. And what were your impressions of Maroon Dam?
It's a very small dam compared to the rest of them that we were used to fishing. It's a really nice place. The water was beautiful. The water had warmed up a little bit, so the bass were a little bit deeper, sitting in the thermos down in probably about 16 and below feet, I would say. They were a really, really nice dam to be on, and some wildlife as per usual when you're out there bird watching, doing a bit of twitching while you're a little bit quiet on the water.
Oh, it's pretty beautiful, isn't it? That's one of the great reasons we do it, isn't it? Communing with nature. Well, well done. I was just looking at the results of the Angler of the Year standings, and you're well and truly up there. You're certainly a long way from the bottom. You're right about in the middle of the pack, I guess, out of a big lot of anglers. You've done really well.
Yeah, and look, I'm happy with that, Scotty, because I only took over this boat mid-season, so I didn't do all the rounds. So imagine if I had have gone with Maddie a little bit earlier, taken over the boat a little bit earlier. Well, look out next year.
Yeah,
we're
well,
coming.
You've got a great one there in top 10, Karen. I think she did get 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. She came 12th, I think. So close enough to the
Karen is our superstar.
Absolutely. Oh, it's great that you're enjoying it and obviously learning a lot. Oh, yeah. I mean, look out next year, eh?
Absolutely, yeah. Trish and I have another charter booked with Maddie to get him to come out with us in the 50-50 boat and really fine-tune our technique with the boat and what we've got to work with in comparison to him and his amazing bass boat with all of his, you know, I call it ultrasound, live scope. Because it looks like an ultrasound.
Yeah, right.
Oh. So, yeah, we're going to put that to the test, and that's going to be pretty epic, I think.
No, it's great that you're enjoying your fishing. What about closer to home? I know you give everything a go. Are the mackerel showing up? Are the snapper on? Are the fish in the estuary doing their thing? What's the go around the Coffs Coast?
Around the Coffs Coast, it is very officially yellowfin tuna time. They are coming in thick and fast, and a friend of mine and I next week are going to go out and chase them. So there's been ones caught from about 30 to 50 kilos over this last weekend just gone. They're really starting to heat up. The current's starting to push down out wide there, and it's coming in close. So I'd say we'll probably start to see some little black marlin coming in very soon.
Oh, good luck with that. Let us know how you go.
I will.
Tight lines, Kendall Kramer.
Thank you.
It's the Big Fish, and Craig McGill is out there on Sydney Harbour. hopefully reeling a few in. Are you getting any, mate?
Good morning, mate. How you doing?
Yeah, going well. What's the story?
Mate, look, it's been pretty good, actually. Mixed sort of bags. We're getting salmon. We're getting some monster flathead. I'll tell you something about the flathead. I think in the last 2 weeks, we've caught 10 or 12 flathead. There's only been one we've been able to keep. They've all been over 70 and up to 90. Massive flathead.
That's really interesting because in my waterway, there's just tons and tons of your 40 to 50. It's a perfect eating size. A bit small. You probably would want to get more like 60, but they're fantastic fish. They're all the males, of course, and I haven't really had to let the big girls go, so that's been very good, and lots and lots and lots of them. So, you know, who knows what's going on, but maybe starting to pay dividends, Craig, this letting the big breeders go.
Oh, look, possibly. I mean, I've had flathead fishing as good as this before, and well before the new legal limits came in. You know, the 70 came in. In fact, going back many years, we had one day that we caught 9 fish, nothing under 70 in one session. That was in April when they were spawning, and they all went back. But, yeah, I don't know. It's a bit unusual. It's mostly unusual at the moment just because of the time of year. We often get this, and we always have in the past. Usually it's just more in sort of autumn.
Interesting. Maybe Sydney Harbour with the deeper water is better habitat for those big girls. And, of course, it's a recreational fishing haven, so they're not being dredged up off the bottom and ending up in the fish shops, as you pointed out the other day.
Yeah. Yeah, look, I guess every system functions differently. And I think in good times too, we've had a lot of rain, there'd be a lot of nutrients going out there at the moment. There's a lot of bait fish and stuff around. I think in good times, fish can spawn more than normal. So if they spawn once a year, I think sometimes they'll go 2 or 3 times a year if it's really good times. It's the same as plants. Some plants will flower 2 or 3 times a year in good conditions. And only once in bad conditions. Maybe fish are the same. I don't know.
So weird you're not picking up the boys, though. You're picking up the big girls, and it's interesting to see them when they are spawning. I think it was Dave Horasty in Nelson Bay, marine scientist, took a magnificent photo of one of those big girls lying on the bottom with about 5 males all lying across her back, crisscrossing her, you know, wooing her.
Well, quite often in North Harbour, when we're lure fishing, you'll be in 20 to 35 feet and you'll get a big girl there on a lure and all the males will follow to the top. You'll have half a dozen males behind her. But where we're getting them at the moment is in very deep water, so it's sort of 60 to 70 feet deep. So it's really, I don't know whether the males would follow them that far up. And who knows what's going on down there. Maybe the males are there, but you'd think we'd be catching them.
You would, and are they releasing okay, Craig, if they're over that 70-centimetre mark for the wreck anglers?
Yeah, look, I find flathead are pretty resilient for release. They're pretty hardy. So we usually just snap a quick pick and get them straight back in, and they've all swum off.
That's great to see. Oh, well, down the track, I think we will see the benefits because they lay millions of eggs. The bigger they are, the more eggs they lay. Is that right?
Apparently, yeah. That's what I've heard. They lay a huge amount of eggs, yeah. I don't think recruitment has ever really been the problem. There's that many flathead out there, really, to be honest. But, you know, I do agree that letting those big girls is... But, I mean, look, to be honest, we've always done that. Even before that rule came in, we kept very few big flathead. I might get the occasional customer that would say, look, you know, I really want to keep it, and, you know, I'm not the bag limit police. I'll let them if they want to do that. But I generally encourage people to put the big girls back, even way before the new rules came in. So I think, you know, a lot of the really sort of leading edge anglers have been doing that for a long time anyway.
Went out last weekend on my little waterway, and we had to hide up this channel behind an island because it was blowing a dog off a chain. Cost me $140 for a new screen for the phone because we're shipping greenies over the front of the boat. And I hadn't put it in a bag, you know. I had to pull up on the island and tip the water out. But I had the young bloke up the front, and he was soft plasticking with his nice little jigs on a 1/6 head. And he got 2 nice flathead, But then three beautiful flounder, like, you know, the nice plate-sized flounder. And, gee, they're good eating. I'd forgotten how good they are and so easy to clean. You don't even have to scale them. Just whack the head off. The guts come out in that tiny little cavity. And that's it. You just throw them in the oil. Bushy gave me a good tip too, putting a knob of butter in your oil. Gee, that makes it even tastier. Oh, yeah. And they were beautiful to eat, very delicate, very nice. I hadn't had them for ages, but that was a nice bycatch. A couple of nice size flounder, and we got some nice whiting and brim. Got a big tarwine, which a lot of people reckon are mushy, but it was fine. I don't, a lot of people turn their nose up at tarwine, but I find them like a squire. You know, they taste like a squire.
Mate, to be honest with you, I can't ever remember eating a tarwine.
Do you get tarwine in Sydney Harbour?
We do, yep. We get them over, particularly over around quarantine. We seem to get a lot, and around the beach areas. If you get over near Washaway Beach or any of the little beaches in North Harbour, you get a lot of tarwine. But, couldn't say I've ever eaten one.
Yeah, a very small minimum size on tarwine, but... I've seen a few around the 3 or 4 pound mark, which eat just like snapper, actually. We caught one in Lake Macquarie once, and it was delightful to eat. It's the Big Fish with Craig McGill. He's out on the water right now. What's on the chew, Craig? What have you been targeting this morning?
Well, mate, I've got to tell you, sad story. We lost an absolutely massive kingfish this morning. It just tore off and on about the fifth run. Normally, if you can get them to five runs, you're sort of pretty clear of the bottom and you can be confident that they're not going to sort of brick you on the bottom. But this one got back there and it actually cut through both strands of my double and just did me. So it was a big fish. And I could tell it was a kingy and not a shark too. Sometimes sharks will get you and they'll swallow it past the double. But what this double was broken at two different spots, like two different lengths. Mm. So I know it's been hauled around a rock on the bottom.
You know through the runs too, don't you? Sharks are fairly consistent with their strength.
Yeah.
But kingies have those bursts of speed that are unstoppable unless you've got a good drag. But that's a shame. It sounds like an absolute beauty.
Big fish, disappointing because we haven't been getting a lot of kings lately. So disappointing to lose the trophy one. There's been quite a few around sort of in the 70 to 80 in the harbour and not a lot of rats yet. They've been pretty quiet. Would have expected to be seeing them by now.
Have you been finding a few squid for bait?
The squid have been good. Yeah, look, anywhere you go. So even the calamari over the kelp, they've been really good. And a mix of sizes, small and big ones. And then the arrow squid over the open grounds have been really good. Yeah, so there's no problem getting the bait. That's that's the easy bit at the moment.
Love those squid. Well, Stinker was right. I did a fair bit of squid jigging around Broughton Island because years ago when we were there, 10 years ago, I got tons and you couldn't raise one. You couldn't raise a tentacle. So I don't know what's going on up there, but yours have come back. Hopefully they'll come back up there as well.
They probably got more hammered up there because of the shallow bay. They got a lot of flood. They had some serious flood water go through there, even last year, floods that we avoided here. So, but they will come back. They will come back. It'll just be a matter of time.
Yeah, hope so. Anyway, good luck with it. You've lost the fish of a lifetime, but you never know.
Yeah.
Next bite. That's always next bite. Any other fish in the esky or let go?
No, but there's been a lot of salmon round. Although they haven't been on top, they've been down deep. So we're just picking them up on the live yakkers that we're putting out.
Are they still those XXXL ones?
No. They're smaller and they're more back to the normal sort of grey ones that we get in the harbour.
Mm-hmm. Still great fish cakes if someone wants to take a couple of slabs home and great fight if you want to let them go.
Yep. No, they're great. They're a great fish.
All right, tight lines, Craig. I'll let you get back to it. Thanks for joining us live from Sydney Harbour.
Thanks, mate. Talk soon.
ABC, The Big Fish and Craig McGill on the water.
I'm going to go fishing. That's what I do. Think about nothing. Not even you. Catch me a big one. Fine speckled trout. Snapping a water, I pull her right out. Deep in the water, down go the line.
be a good one. Taste it for pride. Play out my reel now. Just how I feel now. I'm on a steal right now. Gonna kiss me a trout.
Out of it.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. You can discover more ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listener.